This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 114.
The elements of the OKR framework that I've found really valuable from a strategic perspective is the transparency, the collaborative nature of how they are built and designed, and the fact that they're really designed to be the one source of truth that can be revisited throughout the year. They're a much more agile framework. They're meant to be discussed frequently. I think we've all probably heard the term SMART goal setting, and I like to think of OKRs as more fast. They should be frequently discussed. They should be aspirational, but also ambitious. So aspirational, we talk about aspirational on the objective level. And then when you get to the key results, those should be ambitious. They should be specific, and they should be transparent.
How can OKRs increase transparency and drive performance? What makes OKRs different than traditional goal setting? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. If you're a fan of the Future of HR podcast, then you know that I'm a big fan of Deeper Signals. Deeper Signals is a modern scientific assessments platform that is revolutionizing the way organizations measure, manage, and develop their talent. And in the age of AI, soft skills are becoming more and more crucial. And that's why their latest innovation to the Deeper Signals platform, Skills Selector, is a game changer that we've all been waiting for in soft skills-based hiring. Here's why I'm impressed with Skills Selector. Number one, it's lightning fast. You get to assess a candidate's soft skills in just 10 minutes. It's fully customizable. You can create customized job profiles that perfectly match your company's needs and your competency frameworks. It's visually intuitive. You can compare candidates side by side instantly. And it doesn't just stop at hiring. It seamlessly transitions into personalized onboarding and development plans so your new hires can hit the ground running from day one. And the best part, it's all backed by science and cutting-edge data analytics. But don't take my word for it. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod. That's deepersignals.com/futurepod. And try their core drivers assessment for free. It'll give you a sneak peek of the insights you'll gain with the skill selector. And they're going to give you a 14-day free trial to the entire Deeper Signals platform. Don't miss this chance to transform your hiring process. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod today and see how Skill Selector can make your hiring smarter, faster, and more effective. Since I've doubled down on my mission to develop the next generation of HR leaders, I've been asked to be a keynote speaker for 7 different internal HR conferences or career weeks of Fortune 500 companies. This has been a big honor and a blast. What am I speaking on? Well, I'm leveraging my 100-plus interviews on the podcast and my 20-plus year career as a talent and HR executive to talk about 3 things. 1, how HR leaders can have more influence and impact in what I call the influence equation. 2, how to future-proof your HR career in the age of AI. And 3, the future trends impacting our field. I love speaking to HR teams and I'm extremely grateful for the opportunities that I've had to date. If you're looking for a speaker for your 2025 HR conferences, career weeks, or other meetings, I'd love to hear from you and talk. And with that, my guests this week are Melissa Huntley and Aaron Monroe. Melissa is an experienced talent and HR executive who's held leadership roles at Nike, Salesforce, and currently she's the global head of talent management at Visa. Melissa is a softer voice in the HR community, a frequent speaker at HR conferences, and as you will hear today, someone who embraces innovative approaches to traditional HR practices. Joining Melissa is Aaron Monroe. Aaron is an accomplished enterprise change leader with deep expertise and experience implementing lean and agile methodologies, and frameworks at some of the biggest and most respected companies in the world. He's currently the Global Head Agile Center for Enablement for JP Morgan Chase. And prior to that, he worked with Melissa at Visa, where he was the Global Head Enterprise Agility. Now, OKRs, or Objectives and Key Results, is an alternative to traditional goal setting. And while it's readily implemented in technology companies, it's an approach that all HR leaders should understand and be familiar with. And that's why I'm grateful to Melissa and Aaron for sharing their insights, experiences, and best practices on implementing OKRs. I think you're going to learn a lot from Aaron and Melissa in this conversation as we discussed what OKRs are and what makes them different from traditional goal setting, how OKRs increase transparency, collaboration, and agility in organizations, how the quarterly goal setting OKRs helps managers to be better people leaders, why OKRs can work for organizations of all sizes and complexity, how performance management is integrated into the OKR process, and the role that HR leaders can play in implementing OKR processes into an organization, and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen. Drop me a line on LinkedIn or say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Melissa and Aaron. Melissa, Aaron, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you both doing today?
Doing well, JP. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Melissa, how about you?
I'm doing so well. Thank you for hosting us. We're so happy to be here.
Well, thank you, because as we have known each other for a little while, you brought up the fact that you have been putting in OKRs at Visa, and this is a really important topic. A lot of people aren't talking about OKRs, or if they have, we haven't covered it on the podcast. And you said, I've got the perfect person who knows a lot about this, and you brought Aaron in. So I'm grateful for that, because I think this expertise and topic is just so important for us to talk about in HR. So Aaron, let's start with you. Just to ensure we're all on the same page, can you define that goal setting methodology, OKRs, which I believe stands for Objective and Key Results? What makes this different from traditional goal setting?
Absolutely. So JP, it is objectives and key results, and those are the two components of it. So objectives are those really big, critical things that you need to achieve, those outcomes as an organization that you're trying to achieve. We tend to have those already. Those are things that everybody would say, oh, I know the objectives we're trying to do, but this is a little different. Objectives in the OKR framework is really about being aspirational, really those big strategic opportunities you're going after, the things that you're pushing for, you're stretching for, you really want to achieve. And then the key results are the way that you actually will ensure that you're moving toward achieving that. And so those two components together are the OKR framework. It's really a way to drive strategy and execution and make sure that we're actually delivering against our business results as a team and as an organization, which is a little bit different than the traditional goal setting that you tend to see that many of us do, because those are sometimes a lot more disconnected. They're not collaborative, which OKRs really want. They're sometimes set in the sense of being easy to achieve, or the ones that we think we can achieve. One of the things that they talk about in the OKR framework is if you had green lights all the way, what could you achieve versus what do we believe we can get? So it's just a different way of thinking and framing the things that are most important, and then making sure you actually execute and achieve all those.
And just to double click a little bit more, like on the key results, are those business results, or are they more tactical than you might typically have seen? Because you talked about the objectives being bigger. I think a lot of times we may have a goal of, hey, we want to reduce turnover by 30% this next year. And that might be your big goal. And that might be the only goal we have. And then we'll have tactics on how we're going to get there. What would that look like from an OKR perspective?
The first thing would be, I wouldn't say that reducing turnover by 30% would be actually a really strong and aspirational objective. It might be that we want to make our company a place where everyone loves to be and we enjoy and have a longer tenure. That might be a much better and an objective that is aspirational and people get excited about. And then the key results from that would be at that same altitude, just a little lower of, okay, well, what would be the things that let us know we're heading toward that objective? So it might be that we have input or put together a new performance management plan that we got from our survey, our employee survey, that says this is critical. Or it might be that we've actually benchmarked and done new talent assessments. Any of those items that let you know that you're actually moving toward achieving that outcome of having team members that love being where you are, and your average tenure goes up.
Want to double click or underline a little bit there too. You talked about being aspirational. And so my understanding of OKRs is that that goal is more aspirational, more purpose-driven, and people can really connect to it more, to the point that you said, hey, what's employee turnover 30%? Like, I don't know, no one's fired up about doing that. We want to do that, but that's not like why I'm getting out of bed in the morning, whereas, hey, I want to make this the best place to work, right, in our industry. Right. That's more aspirational. I can get behind that. So that's a helpful point. Melissa, I'm curious for your perspective. If a CEO happened to catch you in the elevator and said, hey, I heard about these OKR thing. Is this something we should be doing versus traditional goal setting? Like, what would you say?
Yeah, I would build a little bit on what Aaron was referring to and really focusing on the outcomes we're trying to drive. And I do think the elements of the OKR framework that I've found really valuable from a strategic perspective is the transparency, the collaborative nature of how they are built and designed, and the fact that they're really designed to be the one source of truth that can be revisited throughout the year. They're a much more agile framework. They're meant to be discussed frequently. I think we've all probably heard the term SMART goal setting, and I like to think of OKRs as more fast. They should be frequently discussed. They should be aspirational, but also ambitious. So aspirational, we talk about aspirational on the objective level. And then when you get to the key results, those should be ambitious. They should be specific and they should be transparent. And transparent to teams, that really drives that collaboration. That drives a lot more understanding of what different teams are working on. It can reduce a lot of redundancy or work that's happening in parallel and people aren't talking, which happens a lot today. So to me, it's about hitting on some of those key principles and making sure that we're finding the hook for what's bugging that CEO about the way it's happening today, and how can we hook on to some of these principles that will help make it better.
Well, I love that FAST. It's a great acronym for this. And what about if you are a mid-level manager, individual contributor, what are the benefits or the pain points OKRs? Like, is this a better system than a traditional goal setting planning, or what are the benefits for that?
Yes, we believe so. Melissa and I do, and that was part of the reason why we implemented it. One of the biggest challenges a lot of C-level execs have is they don't have the connection between strategy and execution. So they struggle to understand, we have this great vision, this great strategy, these great ideas. How are we doing against that execution? Where are we? And that often, the brunt of that falls on middle management. They have to understand and interpret what are the things that are critical and important to the organization? And then also, how do we make sure those things are actually getting done and get status up? So we all run around and try to figure that out on a regular basis. Sometimes we end up trying to duplicate things, as Melissa pointed out. But ultimately, this is a way that they can be clear about not just what their upstream, their leader wants, but also what all the leaders who are collaborating and talking about want at that next level up and that next level up. And then they have a way that they can frame it and communicate with their team members and their peers to make sure that they're all aligned and they're delivering effectively. So it actually reduces a lot of the noise and a lot of the challenge and thrash and churn that you see in middle management, which is often, quite frankly, one of the reasons why they call them like the frozen lair, because they don't want to move, because if they change something, it really creates a lot of thrash for them.
And by the way, one of the things that I've found is an unexpected benefit of OKRs or any goal setting framework that's designed to be agile and discussed really frequently, it actually is almost a manager tool that helps them be better managers. It helps them bring their team along in ways that they sometimes forget how to do, especially if you're a first-time manager. The idea of setting objectives that can last for the year, maybe they're even multi-year, but having key results that you're setting and resetting every quarter. This is what I'm getting done this quarter. Okay, we've gotten that done, or we didn't get that done. We're resetting for the next quarter. It allows that manager to have a real reason and excuse to bring their team together to talk about how they're doing each quarter, which is really what, of course, all great leaders know you should be doing anyway. But it puts a process into place to allow first-line managers to remember to do that and bring their team along. In not just, these aren't just my goals as a manager, this is all of our goals, and we're all connected and contributing to this work.
Yeah, and I love that cadence of quarter by quarter for goals. You know, and I think even if you're using OKRs or not, But I always thought, what do we have to do the next 3 months? Like, the businesses are measured in quarters, and if things happen and change so fast, it's good to bring the team back together and say, hey, what did we get done last quarter? What are we doing this quarter? Like, a month is too much. I mean, obviously, I'm sure that you're using OKRs on a monthly basis, but it's hard to see that progress because things take a little longer than a month a lot of times. So I love that quarterly basis. And I think a lot of organizations are thinking about that now. Hey, everyone. After a quick break, we'll be right back to our conversation with Melissa and Aaron. I'm excited to let you know that I've recently put together a succession planning playbook that you can download for free at futureofhr.com. And whether you want to assess your current approach to succession planning or you're building your leadership development strategy from scratch, this playbook offers an actionable framework designed to help you understand what great succession planning looks like. So go to futureofhr.com and download the succession planning playbook today. I'm also curious, when you think about OKRs, is it well suited for organizations of all sizes, or is this better for larger, more mature organizations or startups? What's your perspective on that, Aaron?
Yeah, so it is suited for all types of organizations, all sizes, and the complexity and the degree to which you go, the depth you use, those are the things that would be the levers you pull based on your size and structure and organization. But ultimately, it's suited for any sizes. So startups might have two or three for the entire startup, the entire organization. Large companies, and when I say two or three, that's objectives and then the key results underneath. Large organizations might have significantly more based on how large they are, how complex they are, the lines of business. But it's a framework that actually can expand and contract as necessary. And there's very little change that you need to make to it.
One of the interesting things that I've noticed is some of the largest tech companies right now are using OKRs, which is amazing to see, but they're not always totally aligned starting with their executive team. Not every executive team member is doing it. It's happening in parts of the organization, and there's places, especially in tech and product development, where it's gotten probably more traction, and there are some parts of the organization where it's not always consistently rolled out or adopted. So one of the things that I've found is no matter what size organization you are, this is a guiding principle. No matter what we're rolling out in HR or supporting in HR and helping our leaders pull through, but the more you can get alignment right at the top and get your CEO very clearly articulating their OKRs and rolling it down from there, the better off you will be.
Yeah, that's a great point. And so what are your tips and how do you guys think about getting an executive alignment? And should you move forward if you don't have full executive alignment?
One of the things that we actually were able to do, and we did for a period of time prior to getting full rollout at Visa, was we were working with business units. So one of the tips is if you can't day one get the entire executive team on board, make sure it's at least a business unit. So a senior leader that actually has a significant group and organization, because what you want is you want them to talk about their strategy, their vision, the things that are critical for that business unit. And then that would actually work its way through, cascade down. So then their directs would create their objectives based in that tied to the top level objective. So that's one tip. Make sure it's connected. The second tip is plan together and have a conversation together about them. OKRs are not designed to be kind of backroom napkin, you know, kind of hiding out and then like just showing them to your peers or actually just bringing them out and people are like, what are those? They're really designed for you to have a conversation. That is what the magic is with them, is that you're having a conversation about what's important, who needs to be part of it, how we can be part of it, what part of that objective or what key results are we driving. So the second tip would be to have that conversation, to partner in, to be clear. And then the third part would be, as Melissa pointed out, to be transparent about it, to not have it somewhere where you've done it, you've talked with your peers, but it's only at this level that can actually see these and another level can only see these. But you want to be as transparent as possible so that everyone understands what's important, what's valuable, how their work ties to that. Those would be the three big key items and key principles I would say to think about.
Yeah, really good advice, Aaron. And since transparency is a big part of the ethos, I wonder, Melissa, at Visa, how visible are OKRs and to whom? Like, how'd that go in terms of that transparency piece of like these goals across the organization? Love to hear more about this.
I'll actually start by sharing company that I was at prior to Visa is where I've actually seen the most transparency, not just in goal setting, but in all people practices. And that was a tech company, still a founder-led, just really, really strong guiding principle in the company for internally how we communicated. We had the firsthand opportunity of seeing how transparent you could be. I mean, with everything, talk about employee engagement, survey result, everything was really published and was out there. But same thing on goal setting. And I saw that role modeled again from the top. And having come from seeing what a valuable experience that is for employees, now it does come with risks. And especially working in a company that potentially has a lot of press coverage and things are leaking, and there is that concern. And I will say that was a risk that at that company, the founder and the executive team was willing to take. I would say in financial services, we are more regulated. We're a little more risk averse and a little more careful about our intellectual property and generally have been less transparent as an industry. That said, if you have buy-in at the top for moving faster, you're going to have to take some risks around that. So we talked a lot about the transparency component of OKRs and talked about that with the leadership team and what do we show and what do we not show. And at the end of the day, absolutely, there are things and metrics that are critical business drivers that are critical to the business that maybe a merger, an acquisition you're planning on that you're not going to share and publish. And so it was really clear that, yes, there are some things that you're not going to publish and put out there that are very confidential that you don't want to hit all employees or the market or have leaked before you're ready to communicate it. But that wasn't enough of a blocker to prevent us still using the principle and finding ways to be transparent about 90, 95% of the work you're doing, you should be able to share with the rest of your employees. I have found that it's most concerning at the very, very top. And then the deeper you go, the less concern there is around transparency. As long as you're setting the expectation with employees and they know what they're putting in whatever system you're using is going to be visible to others, people will find a way to make sure they're phrasing it in a way that makes sense to other people and isn't sharing information they shouldn't be sharing.
The difference in my mind of transparency versus relevancy. And so I was thinking about goal setting that, okay, for my team, if I'm in the HR team or I'm in a product management team and we have OKRs and we have key results, we all know what we're working on because we're on that same product, that same team. So there's full transparency around what I'm doing in that function. In my understanding, the way you're talking about it is that I could then look and say, I'm not in IT or technology. I could look at technology's OKRs and be like, how are they doing? You're both nodding.
Exactly, so right. That's exactly right. Okay. Which is like a really interesting flip. Now, again, to your point on relevance, how important is it for me as an HR employee to check and see the OKRs of technology? It may or may not be important depending on what those goals are. But two things I will say is one, you'd be surprised at how much people end up being interested in, oh, that is connected to my work, or we are working on something quite similar, and I should see what that team is working on. And the second thing is, think about it from a career perspective. And certainly employees who are earlier in career, who are still navigating and thinking through what is the right function for me to be involved with, it's actually a great way to learn about what different functions do, what different teams in your companies do, and actually understand, is this the kind of work I might want to be involved with? And maybe there's an opportunity for me to stretch into one of these teams and help out. So we've actually found that as an interesting component of this as well. And it's allowing people to get more visibility to what other teams do, think about potential future career moves as well.
Absolutely. And how many times have we all in our career heard or been part of the, if I'd have only known, oh, if I'd have only known they were working on that, we could have helped or we could have partnered with it, or we went off and built our own thing or had somebody else build our own thing where we could have just partnered over here and actually gotten a lot more value out of it. And so that's also the power of the transparency and understanding what's going on across the organization to be able to communicate and see that and be able to talk about how you might be able to contribute. There's lots of things where it's, oh, I have those skills, but nobody ever asked me and I wasn't aware that that was happening. I could contribute. And then the one other thing that I think often is missed in the thinking of traditional goal setting is the fact that if these are the most important things in the organization, why wouldn't you want everybody knowing what those are and everyone figuring out how they can contribute to achieving those outcomes?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. You've sold me. I was just trying to get my head around the transparency piece because it's a big difference from what you normally have. And it's probably not that organizations today wouldn't want to share their goals across functions. There's not really usually a very good vehicle to do that. It's time consuming. They may have changed, right? That's part of the challenge. But what I'm hearing is that another big part of OKRs is getting that cross-functional collaboration. And I wonder, maybe Aaron, start us off a little bit, but then Melissa, I'd love to hear your perspective. What are some of the secrets to getting cross-functional collaboration, or was there challenges, or did this go really easily?
Definitely there are challenges, and there are definitely what I would say two or three secrets that I think we found. The first thing to think about is this is really a mindset shift. Often we think about traditional goal setting, and sometimes we don't want to share it because we spent a bunch of time and invested a lot of our effort and thought into what this thing is. And then we share it and somebody goes, well, I don't believe in that, or that conflicts, or I have a reason why I want this other thing. So we tend to sometimes keep those closer. The magic with OKRs is you start having those conversations up front. So there is no big reveal. There is no, I don't want to share, because you're sharing it up front and you're sharing ideas and you're collaborating on what those things are. And you're trying to find out, hey, how can we help each other achieve this broader objective? So that's really one of those things, is that when you flip that mindset from I'm going to show it at the end to we're going to start and co-create, you also start to have and figure out how to work together, what the right language is, what the right things are, what the right structure is. And then there's two other items where you have that. One is really kind of a magic or secret item, is understanding what your peer and partner in their organization is trying to do. So often we're so busy in our world and our organization of what we're trying to do that we don't look side to side. We don't see the attendant groups on the other side that are trying to do other things that are really critical as well. And so we don't have a good understanding of what they're trying to do. So you need to get a good understanding of what they're trying to do and how, as Melissa pointed out, it might inform, impact, or integrate with what you're doing. And then the second thing is, it's the classic one of assume positive intent. So when you see something in a page, you don't automatically assume that somebody's trying to do something nefarious, or they don't understand this or don't understand that. Be curious. Go ask the questions. Say, hey, I see that you got this objective or these key results. I didn't hear them. I didn't see them. Can we have a conversation about it? So assume positive intent, that it wasn't that they were trying to hide it, that they missed it or were thinking of other things. Didn't realize that you actually needed to be aware and involved in it.
Yeah. And I would say, just to get even more tactical on this, if you're really thinking about this in your company and you go straight to the like, but what's the vehicle? What's the system? How is this actually going to work? Right. A lot of us are using there's not too many choices. And from the big HRIS systems that we're using for current goal setting processes. And what I will say is that while it's true, many of these aren't designed with OKRs really in mind, they can be set up in a way with a little bit of jerry-rigging. They can be like set up in a way that will allow goals to be transparent. And I've done that at a couple of different companies. And so the trickier part is building these tools are not really a collaboration tool. So transparency tends to be a little bit easier to overcome in some of the traditional systems that many of us are using at our companies. Collaboration is a little harder. And so to overcome that, I would just recommend rely on a collaboration tool when goal setting is happening or when OKRs are being set. And traditionally in the beginning of the year, and then again at each quarter, relying on any additional technologies that you already use, that people are already familiar with, that they collaborate in. And it could just be as simple as a Google Doc or Microsoft Word where you're sharing and people can actually collaborate. But the idea of inviting people in to, this is how I'm thinking about my next quarter. This is how I'm thinking about measuring my success. Does this make sense? Tagging people in. Do you agree on this? Is this something you will partner with? What resources are we going to use on this? That is what will drive towards that shared ownership and the collaboration, which I will be honest, that is a trickier part, at least I've found from a systems perspective in terms of what many of us are working in today.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's helpful to be so pragmatic and think about how do you work around some of these big systems or leverage them with some jerry-rigging, as you called it. But there are some OKR companies out there that do sell the software off the shelf, and you can go that way, which would be simpler if you're maybe starting from scratch in a smaller company. That sounds like that's a good approach. But what I hear you guys coming through is, look, the tool is the tool, the system's the system, but the process of setting these objectives and key results and being collaborative up front and being transparent which I think one of the best, really the best ways around goal setting is to commit publicly to what you're going to do. There's nothing better to make sure your goal's done than doing that. So having that visibility is pretty incredible for a company to see that and be able to track and follow up. And the fact that anyone across the company can see my goals would kind of motivate me a little bit. But let's talk about metrics, though. So how, when you talk about metrics or scorecards and the key results, where does that go and how does that fit into here as you look back and say, hey, did we hit our key results for the quarter? Is there a certain process that you guys follow that's different from goal setting?
That's one of the areas that is often the confusing area when you talk about objectives and key results. You'll have people say, well, I have scorecards or I have this tool because I'm an agile company and we do epics and we use this tool to talk about the work, or we've got metrics that do that. And so that was one of the big conversations we had at Visa, an ongoing one for a while, to make sure we were clear about the different components and the role they played in the organization. The objectives and key results are really about being able to be clear and outcome focused on what are those big aspirational outcomes you're going after. Key results are the things that will tell you how you know you're progressing toward that. But then you've got KPIs and or scorecards, which are the measures that let you know if the things that you're doing are actually working. Those are the hard metrics that you'd look at. So in the example that we traditionally would use is like, we're trying to actually change the way that we have our organization to make people love working there. And then here are a couple of key results that are around that. Well, then KPIs or a scorecard are going to be the hard numbers that you're looking at. Like, hey, we did these kind of things that were key results. Hey, we wanted to roll out an employee survey and get 90% response rate. Okay, great. Well, that's one of them. We also want to increase the average tenure. There's whatever those key results are, then the KPIs are going to be the things you're tracking on an individual basis to see, are the things that we're doing working? And if they're not, to Melissa's point, you can then adjust and say, hey, we were trying to do these things that would actually go toward these key results, and they're actually not. The work is not. It's actually changing or impacting it negatively, those KPIs. Let's actually shift what we're doing and the work we're doing to achieve it. Let's go back and talk about the key results and the work that are underneath those. They're different parts of a universe or a system to try to drive outcomes, but they play very different roles and they're important to understand them that way.
Yeah, Aaron, it sounds like you're also, there's some flexibility and adaptability built in when the KPI isn't the right KPI. Like we pushed back on this 30% turnover reduction, which to be honest, is a pretty normal KPI I've seen for HR leaders. I mean, Melissa, you probably have seen that as well. But what you're saying is if that's not working, then you're starting to look at what are really the process metrics or other things that we should look at that would actually drive the outcomes we're trying to get to.
Absolutely.
I think that's an important point. Speaking of scorecards, organizations like to give people scores at the end of the year called performance ratings. We like to know how we did. We like to know how to turn that to compensation and maybe differentiation for bonuses, et cetera. So I'm interested, Melissa, how are you implementing OKRs into your performance management and talent review processes?
Great question. I get this one a lot. And this one can create a lot of debate, actually. This can get pretty emotional for people. And there's actually, I think, sort of the traditional OKR school of thought. Aaron, you might have to jump in and correct me, but the traditional school of thought in OKRs is these should not be connected to performance management. And that's the way in a lot of big tech companies, they are sort of separate. And then there's another goal setting process. But from my experience today, people are overwhelmed. They've got so much going on. To have multiple frameworks and multiple things that you're tracking, it just doesn't work for people anymore. The idea of a separate goal setting, a separate scorecard, a separate OKR, a separate thing for project management, this is all just too much for employees to be tracking. From my experience, the best thing is to integrate it into all one. And so using OKRs as the umbrella, that is the strategic framework. We do have in lots of places, yeah, of course, you're always going to have sales dashboards and scorecards. Those should feed in to your OKRs, right? As Aaron was pointing out, those should be integrated. They're not too completely separate things. They have different use cases, but your OKRs aren't going to be completely different from what is in your scorecard. And the same goes with performance management. I think the idea of OKRs are, these are sort of a way of setting your goals of what you're going to get done this year. You're getting pretty specific. If you're doing them right, you've got really nice quarterly results of, I've gotten these targets achieved this quarter, and now this quarter I've gotten this done. And many companies now are using the concept of quarterly conversations leading up to an annual review. So it actually works really nicely to have these touch points every quarter, tracking how your goals are doing. Of course, you got to build in whatever else you have from a performance management perspective, whatever leadership model you have or how you're assessing behaviors that should be built in. But by the end of the year, you should have a nice set of four conversations leading up to your total year-end review. Now, what I will say is the reason this can spark a lot of debate is that that seems to feel like a sort of just an absolute way of assessing performance versus relative. And if you have ratings, and especially if you have ratings and you have a distribution curve, there's an element there of not just absolute performance. There's an element of we're evaluating your performance, not just based on what you got done and how you delivered that in terms of your leadership behaviors, but we also are stacking you up to how others at your level or in similar roles also perform. And so I think just being really clear up front with employees, again, go back to the transparency, setting expectations that you will be evaluated. Yes, we're going to be using your OKRs to evaluate that component of your performance, but we're also going to be looking at how challenging they were or how ambitious they were and how you achieved them against others who are in similar roles. That's a really important part of it.
Absolutely, Melissa. And I agree with you in the part that it should be part of the performance equation and the performance conversation. I think sometimes where you see the disconnect between traditionalists versus people that are progressing the framework is the fact that it should be the only thing or not involved, because there's no question that if you're setting these goals and these are critical to your organization, critical to your team or your leader, that that should factor into how you're evaluated. I think the difference is when it's like that's the only thing that you're evaluated on, that's where you'll get people that are more traditional. It goes, no, you shouldn't do that. But I think everybody agrees that at some point in time, we need to look back and say, how did we do against the things that we've said? And what did I contribute against those? And how can that conversation give me feedback, set me up on the skills that I have, help me grow in my career and help the organization achieve its outcomes and its purpose?
Very helpful. So it sounds like you can use OKRs and still have a performance management, a talent review process. It should not be separate. You can separate it, but you can also make that work. And because it is goal setting, we're still talking about setting goals. It just may be a different form of goal setting, right?
Yeah.
More collaborative. But thanks for talking about that a little more, Melissa, in detail. What about if we're going to actually implement this, what role should HR leaders be playing in implementing OKRs?
I love this question because when you think about OKRs, if you ask a business leader who's going through OKR implementation or using OKRs, you ask them, what are they for? They will say, it's for business prioritization. It's to prioritize the work and to get everyone aligned. Sometimes if you ask HR professionals what OKRs are for or for what goal setting is for, it's so that I can evaluate performance. The idea is, again, you can do both. But I do think the role that HR should be playing is, first of all, thinking about helping the organization and leaders actually drive it in a way that, in their mind, is helping them get their work done better, faster, and with more alignment. And it's truly coming in with that perspective. I think HR can play a very strong role in supporting and making sure it's adopted and that it's connected from a people process perspective. But if you're only coming in with the mindset of this is the purpose of them, it's just for performance management, it's so that I can do this process, you're going to miss the boat. I think you've got to come in with the purpose is about helping leaders make better decisions, get work done faster, get the most out of their people, and continue to motivate their people to do more and do better work that's connected to what matters to them most.
Absolutely, Melissa. I concur with that. And I look at it and think of the fact, as you laid out, it's two sides of the same coin, which is ultimately what we're trying to do is achieve business results and have the best experience and the best results for and from our people. And there's two people or two groups that do that. One would be the business groups, the other would be our HR professionals, HR partner. Thinking of it that way, coming together to say, how can we achieve the business results? How can we achieve our people results? And using the OKR framework to be able to do that is a fantastic way to really think about that, partner, and figure out how they can work together.
Melissa, Aaron, last question for you both. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
I would have to say connection. Connection. I think we've heard a lot right now around loneliness and around people working in silos. We talked a lot today about collaboration in OKRs. So I think this is all in the spirit of driving more connection. And that is a huge role of HR leaders today.
And I'm smiling because we didn't rehearse this, but connection was going to be actually my word as well. I swear. Because the idea being that that is one of the things that we struggle with of being able to figure out in large and small organizations. We all have different things going on. We all have a lot of things coming at us. And one of the people and one of the groups that we always kind of have in common and can talk to would be those in HR, because those are the ones that are looking out for the people processes, the organization as a whole. So they connect the organization, they connect people, they drive and build and look after those relationships in the organization. And so to me, that is what an HR function is they're connecting people, connecting the organization, making that big thing feel small and feel like I belong and feel like I'm included and feel like I'm part of something. Even though I might never see other people, we're all part of that and connected to that same thing.
Awesome. Aaron, Melissa, thank you so much for connecting. See what I did there? Connecting OKRs to business results and how you implement this. This was a fun conversation, super educational. Thanks again for being on the podcast. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Melissa and Aaron for sharing their insights and experiences implementing OKRs. We all learned a lot. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe or share our podcast with at least one other person. This really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Prasad Sethi. Prasad's a software thought leader in the people analytics space. He currently co-teaches an MBA course at Stanford on the trends shaping the world of work. And he serves as an independent advisor to companies like BetterUp, DataStax, and Grab on people, culture, and organizational matters. Prior to his current role as an advisor and teaching at Stanford, Prasad was at Google for 15 years, where he founded the renowned people analytics team in 2007. Under Prasad's leadership, Google undertook highly influential and well-known research projects, including Project Oxygen and Project Aristotle, to enable great managers and teams. In my conversation with Prasad, we discuss his groundbreaking research at Google and his thoughts on the future of work, future of HR, and what that means in the age of AI. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.